Hi, this is John Campbell introducing Miracle Hour on bbsradio.com. This is your weekly program where we talk to interesting people from all over the world. And this evening our guest is a lady called Solera Green. And Solera is here in UK at the moment, but she hails from Canada. I think from Toronto or from that side of the country. And she's going to talk to you about what she does in the world, which is creating miracles as well. So, Solera, if you're there, can you hear me?
Hello, John. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. It's so good to hear your voice. And it's so funny that you're only, what, probably 5 miles down the road from me. Isn't that amazing?
That's right. It's so, a small world.
Yeah, so what I normally do is get my guests to tell a little bit to the listeners, first of all, about how we met, because, you know, the amazing thing on this, you meet so many amazing people. And I'm trying to recall, I know it was something to do with also a radio show, if I remember rightly. Do you?
Because I'm not sure. It might have been. I think we both got connected up because of the work we were doing around kind of the evolution of children these days. And we went up to do a radio interview with Munchie, who you did last week, didn't you?
That's right. That's I think where we first met. We went to do another radio program with Munchie for the Children of the New World conference that we both spoke at. And I think
we actually met
at the radio station, right?
Yeah.
And that's when I first started to hear about the work you were doing with your husband, Santari.
That's right.
Tell us a little bit about your story. First of all, where you come from, because as you know, I've got my beautiful wife, Mary, over there in Canada listening on air here today with our great spiritual sisters. And
great.
You're over from that part, aren't you?
Yes, I'm from Ontario, just a little bit south of Ottawa, actually. That's where I grew up, and then I worked in Toronto and Ottawa, and then moved to the States for 7 years, and I've now been in the UK for 11 years, so I've been fortunate enough to live in lots of countries and love it.
Okay, so you started off, you're born in Canada.
Yes.
And what was your path into, let's call it the awakening path, you know, because I think that's always a path that's really interesting for people.
Well, it's interesting. I would say the first moment of that was when my dad passed over. Oh, that was about 20-odd years ago. And it just, you know, for the first time in my life, I could feel that he was with me even after his death. And that really reoriented me to a whole new way of looking at life, that there was more to it than, you know, I'd previously thought. And so I began immediately after his funeral, I began to study transformation. And from there, moved into spirituality. And from there, transitioned into conscious evolution, which is what I'm teaching and coaching and working with today.
Okay, so what line of work were you in before this all happened? Did you, you know, were you in the corporate world, or what was it?
I was working for Bell Canada. I was a project manager for them.
So you're working for Bell Canada. That's the telephone company, isn't it?
Yeah, who would have thought it? Who would have thought it all those years ago, working for Bell Canada, and now here I sit in England and talking about conscious evolution. It's amazing, isn't it?
It really is. It is. So it really started with the passing of your dog.
Yeah,
and,
my dad,
and
yeah.
And then we kind of, you know, because I was so enthralled when I got speaking to you and we met, and then you started to talk about the different work you're doing, but I don't really have a deep understanding of the level of it. Is it like a counseling, energetic work? How does it work, Solera? Would you like to tell a little bit about that?
I train people all over the world in evolutionary coaching, visionary leadership, and conscious evolution. So those are the like three specialties, but I would say it's a body of work which applies across everything in life, whether it's kids and learning and education or business or, you know, politics, anything. It really does apply. And it started about 11 years ago. I came to England and I had an experience which made me an ultra sensitive. In other words, I would walk downtown, I would go into grocery stores and retail shops and whatnot, and I would come home dizzy, nauseous, and exhausted. So I was beginning to wonder, oh my gosh, how am I ever going to live in the world? And as I began to talk about it with other people, I realized there were all these people who had pretty much lived their lives that way, that they'd been empathic from the time they were small children. In other words, they could pick up other people's feelings and do things with them. So I then began to work with people who I would call energetically aware or energetically sensitive to evolve that ability into a strength and a kind of what I call life power. And I think that's where, you know, the miracles you're talking about, a miracle hour, I think that's a part of where that comes from, is you begin to work with life power and begin to work transformatively with others to create amazing breakthroughs, not just for people individual, but for consciousness as a whole. And one of the things I'm starting to train people in now is how we can work collectively to create a new consciousness for a whole new vibrant world, and how you be a leader and be leaderful in that with others, so that it's fun, it's exciting, it's exhilarating, it's creative, you know, so it's not just one leader, that everyone is leading. So that's the kind of work that I do now.
Right, that's really interesting, because, you know, oh my goodness, I can really relate to the way you felt, you know, and I think so many of us people who are drawn to this field have that commonality, you know, this ultra-sensitiveness, which is often, you know, denied or decried when we're young, especially amongst the, you know, the male population, because that's the sort of social thing that that's put on them, but, you know, and I mean, that's amazing, because I'm still I feel really so many people are experiencing this and don't know what to do with it, and it does, you know, in my experience, what you're talking about is, you know, it drains you, it makes you feel low, and you know, you've just got to go around certain areas, so how do you deal with that then, and how can you change it into this vibrant, you know, energy you're talking about?
Well, the first thing is that empathy, which is feeling other people's feelings, tends to come from kind of working around what I would call the lower heart and the solar plexus area. So that area of the body is where you're feeling out from to feel the energy of the world around you. Most of the empaths used that when they were children to kind of sense when something strange was about to happen, so they could either get out of there or help alleviate it by taking on the energy and transmuting it away, so it would make the situations easier for them. But what happened is they began to learn to only sense the world that way. So what we train people to do is to instead open up the whole of them, and they begin to work with what I would call the high heart or the breastplate area. And what happens when you open up the whole of you is you start to sense the energy of potential rather than the energy of problem. And so instead of feeling out to the low vibrational energies around, like the problems of, they might feel fear or anger or upset or distress or even joy, you know, those kinds of emotions, when you're working to feel the energy of potential, even when you feel things like fear and anger and etc., you translate it into its potential and therefore don't take the hit on it, the energetic hit on it, so you don't feel sick, you don't feel nauseous, you don't take it on. And one of the things that we've been teaching is that, for example, it's a new relationship to emotion. So fear as the tip of leadership, why would you be afraid if it wasn't a nice big next step for you? And anger as the tip of passion, so why would we be so angry if we didn't care so powerfully about something? And so what we're now working with the emotional range, is how to flip that into the energy of potential, so that, for example, when I'm coaching people, what happens is instead of them being stuck in their fear, suddenly they can realize that that's the energy of their next step. And they can bring it up and take it on, choose to be with its potential, and step into it fully so the energy infuses through their whole body rather than they're left just with this kind of queasy feeling in their stomach all the time. And I'll tell you, it works a dream, John. It's amazing.
Well, I need some of that. Oh, that sounds cool. Because, I mean, that's what I find, that's my experience is, you know, I can get some piece of information or something, and I'll feel, like you used the word, an energetic hit, and that's what it feels like. It feels like a hit, and sometimes has the ability to like paralyze me for a period of time or whatever. It just keeps me stuck. I mean, that's the thing that would be great to be able to change that. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about, that kind of feeling?
Yeah, absolutely. And it really just takes a reorientation from problem to potential. That's as simply put as it is. Now, there's some energetic steps associated with it, but I think when people reorient to a different perspective of things, it flips the energetic response around. So you take, for example, you know, when something happens in people's lives, a lot of times we go, it doesn't make any sense. Why would this happen to me? I don't understand. How could I have created this? You know, but in the long run, when you look back a couple of years later or even 10 years later and you look back and you say, oh, that was the most amazing thing that happened for me, and it taught me this, and I've learned these things, and it brought me these people into my life. And so one of the things that we're talking about, reorienting from problem to potential, is about being able to tune in now to the knowing of what this is for now, so you don't have to go through that period of angst around it. So you can actually take hold of the potential of it and live it through into realization now without taking 2, 5, or 10 years.
Yeah, well, of course, I think, you know, I think a lot of us understand that principle at an intellectual level, but I think I can speak for myself, you know, it's about remembering and thinking about how to deal with in the moment, and that's, I think, the challenge, isn't it?
Well, I suppose at first for me it was a bit of a practice. You know, I had to keep reorienting myself to looking at things from a different place. And it really does take tuning into what I would call the living intelligence or the knowing fields around us, to consciousness, if you will. I think that everything's there. Some level of ourselves already knows why we're choosing this, why we're creating it, why this is happening on the biggest levels. And so it takes a practice kind of stopping when we're in that reaction to it, stopping, tuning in, connecting to that knowing, and then just really asking, what is this really all about and for? What's the potential of this? And then once you get that, you feel this huge sense of relief, first of all, like, oh, okay, it's for this. And second, it gives you the energy to be able to move forward with it more powerfully, more passionately. It's as if you open up the fuel gauges, you know, the you're able to drive the whole thing more powerfully.
Right. And
does
how
that make
does
sense?
Sorry, carry on.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And, I mean, one of the things that I'm beginning to see in this whole field is that there are so many things out there which really are very, very similar.
Yeah.
You know, the end result is the same thing, and I think we're all heading for the same end, which is to, you know, in the Course's parlance, you know, the Course in Miracles parlance, is to go home, you know, to find who we really are, you know.
Yeah.
And would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I believe this is, like, the most amazing evolutionary time ever on planet Earth. I mean, it's absolutely the best time you ever want to be alive, because there's so much changing so fast now that, you know...
I know what you're saying, I agree. But at times, when it comes at you thick and fast, I don't know, I think, my God, you know, this is all happening too fast, too much.
Well, I do think we've all agreed to that somewhat, you know, that we've said, look, we've got to increase our vibrational frequency. And so we're getting that from all kinds of places, from the Earth, from the cosmos, from the stars, from the sun, from life itself, from people. And we're amping up our vibrational frequency. And I think the more we increase our vibrational frequency, sometimes the more challenging it can be physically to go through that in a very short period of time. Like, we've really done some moves in the last decade or two in that regard. But also, as we move the vibrational frequency up, we also move our conscious awareness up. And so for me and the people that I know and work with, it's like life is becoming easier, more gracious, more in our hands to shape and create from a sense of greater purpose. And we're having fun doing it. So it's losing some of that kind of being banged around by things, which is wonderful. I love it. And again, I will say it did take some practice for us at first, but I would say now that we're in that kind of flux and flow with it, we do go up and down with the vibrational frequencies and the consciousness shifts, but wow, it's kind of exhilarating and exciting because you can feel like, oh, here comes the next one, you know. And I'm one of those people who loves, you know, emailing and talking to other people and finding out what's happening for them. So I tend to, like, if suddenly I'm falling asleep in the middle of the afternoon, five of my friends will email me the same day and say, did you just fall asleep this afternoon? And we'll find out we all did it at exactly the same time and that we're actually doing something together, and we'll start to suss it. So it kind of puts a different light on the things when it's happening like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and how I like to explore different theories. You know, for example, there's the great adage, which I'm totally believing is about a healer heal herself, and
yes,
that, you know, we cannot really heal another, or even the word, but we cannot facilitate that until we've healed ourselves. So in this work, how did you first deal with your own stuff, for want of a better word? You know, did you use this practice to do that, or did you do inner child work? I mean, what's your philosophy around that kind of stuff?
Well, I was lucky. I had a very easy upbringing, I think. But it, like everybody in the Western society, I think we all had stuff to deal with. And I suppose it was what goes back again to the time my dad died. I immediately made a decision after his funeral that if I died the next day, I wasn't going to be happy. I wouldn't feel fulfilled, and I needed to do something about that. So I immediately started taking transformational courses, just anything I could get my hands on that, you know, would let me look into myself and discover more of who I was, and kind of step up, you know, into more of who I really was meant to be. And so I took about a 7-year journey studying transformation. And what happened during that time, I would say, I found wholeness for myself. I found to say contentment would maybe be the right word, but I think it's even a bit more beyond that. I got okay with myself, might be the way to say it. And once I got okay with myself, then I could launch off into a whole other different journey and say, What are we up to then? What's this all about? Where are we going together as a world? How do we solve some of the really big world problems so we don't have war on the planet, so we don't have starvation on the planet? And I started to really work in a transformative way then, from a place of wholeness and holding other people in that place. So I no longer perceive people as unwell or not whole or needing something from me. I began to perceive them as amazing beings who had incredible gifts to give us. And I found very quickly that that was hugely transformative for them and for me, that I think if you're willing to see someone else, you get yourself as well. and it gives you amazing relationships with people. So it just started down this whole path of working for magnificence in people. And that's where I began to develop the transformative work myself, based on energetics, based on consciousness, based on evolution, as to how could we really open up to the very fullest of who we are, not even just, you know, this person in this life, but all the knowledge you've ever had through all of time, all the wisdom that's available to us all the experience, all the ability to create. And so I began to work with people from that place to see how we could evolve ourselves and take ourselves to new levels of being.
And I mean, that's fascinating that you get to this stage. And would you mind sharing a little bit about, you said you did a lot of transformational courses, and to kind of track the route that you took to get there, would you mind sharing, you know, the kind of thing you did?
Well, I did kind of a whole bunch of things at the time, some spiritual, some personal development. Mostly, though, I was focused on working in a kind of, I'd say outdoor breakthrough courses. You know, we did zip lines and I did communication programs where I really, really, really began to get that nobody heard anybody else speaking. You know, we were kind of listening through these huge filters of our own past history all the time, and we were never truly hearing what someone else said. That was hugely a breakthrough for me to realize that. It stopped me having arguments with people right there when I realized, oh, I'm never hearing them. And so I just went on this, and then I started to do some spiritual work as well. So I did some past life workshops as well as channeling and energy work with a quantum physicist. So I was doing some of that stuff through those 7 years, maybe 10 years, I would say. And from there, I began to do psychic work myself. I don't do psychic work anymore. I stopped doing that about 6-7 years ago. But I loved it while I was doing it. I was doing past life readings for people. And what I was doing in doing that was, you know, you could say maybe it was past life, maybe it wasn't. But I was giving them parts of themselves that they hadn't really acknowledged yet, and giving that a life in today's world for them, and resolving anything that might hold them back in this lifetime that freed them into knowing who they were. So it was really a journey, and I loved it, because for me, I probably did 3,000-4,000 people all their past lives, and so it gave me this huge picture of consciousness, and not just on this planet, but of the cosmos and how we all fit together, and the story through history. It was a fascinating time for me to really begin to see that I became more than just a small little person on a planet, you know, kind of third rock from the sun. I began to realize it was much more to life than we were seeing, and it fascinated me. So from then I began channeling, and I would channel masters and, you know, Christ and many of the beings that, you know, you hear about being channeled. And I loved that. It just touched me very profoundly. And then one day, this was about 7 years ago, I think I finally said to myself, you know what? It might be me talking. And if it is me talking, if I have and we have that much wisdom available to us, then in order to evolve, I think I need to start to say that that's me talking, and to own that, and to open my eyes, and to be that being here with as much responsibility and accountability as I can give to that knowing and that wisdom. And so from that point, I began writing myself, and I've written, I've probably written about 14 books. I've got 2 in print at the moment, but the rest were all e-books that I did. And began to gather energetically aware people together who wanted to work on collective consciousness and evolution of our being and stuff like that. So that's the kind of story of my journey to where we are so far, I suppose.
That's fascinating. And did you find that, was it disconcerting when you first started to sort of channel stuff?
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people talk about being shocked by it, you know. And
oh, my gosh, yes. I remember the first time I ever channeled Christ. I was married to a deacon in a Black Baptist church in Atlanta, Georgia. And he just looked at me like, honey, I don't think so. So it was quite interesting for me at the time. It really shook life up a bit. But I'll tell you, you know, whether it actually was or wasn't, when you feel that, when you connect with that energy, that wisdom, that presence, it touches you so profoundly that just by being in that space and with that energy or being, something miraculous happens for you. And nobody can take that away from you. You know, it didn't matter who said what to me. The experience was so profound that your life has to be changed by it, and you have to be called into something far greater about life.
I mean, that sounds like a big challenge to me to actually say that you channeled Christ, you know, and I'm sure that's a big thing to actually open up to people, and especially if you say your husband was a Baptist minister, it would probably calm down like a, you know, lead balloon.
Did it ever? Oh, did it ever? Yeah. But
did you kind of keep that
well
quiet amongst your, you know, just a few chosen few people?
Sorry, say that again.
Did you kind of keep that information pretty quiet to yourself?
I did for a while because I was working for a company there, and so yeah, I kept it relatively quiet. But every once in a while, we'd go out to lunch, and somebody would ask me about something, and I would. These things would come, that stuff I was doing, and my gosh, it amazed me how many people around me just were so like, wow, this is amazing, let's talk about this, let's, you know, and they began to share their own experiences, those moments that really touched your life, and so I began to have this amazing circle of friends that, you know, you could have these conversations with. And I began, when I was in Atlanta, Georgia, this was like 12, 14 years ago, I at the time left my husband, and because we just saw we were going in different directions. And we do love each other still and have great respect for one another. But I moved into a big house in the middle of a field, and used to have people come over every Saturday night, and we'd just hang out together and have those conversations and do energy work and do transformative work for the planet and stuff like that. So very quickly I became a kind of networker for people who were touched by something more in life.
And with the work that you do you find that this does away with the need of, I mean, do you still find you needing to grieve? Do you get into sad periods of time, or are you aware of stuff like that, or do you just kind of flick a switch and do what you need to do and it goes?
Well, a couple things about that. I'm glad you brought up that point about grief, because I believe that we're evolving our relationship to death, and I believe a lot of people perceive it that way these days. In myself, I love having my emotions be very, what we call good or bad. So I don't try to switch them off, and I don't try not to have them. I try to have them with as much joy as I can have them. If I'm angry, I will find a friend or my current husband, who's amazing, and I will get them to work with me to let me bring my anger through in a powerful way, but to get underneath it to find out what's the thing that's really, really bugging me, that I'm really passionate about, that I really care about. And what will happen is within an hour or two, I will have brought through a breakthrough, because anytime I get angry, it's because something really big is coming through and I need to pay attention to it. So I kind of use it. I have this practice of really using the joy of my emotions, as I say, be they good or bad, to bring the potential through. But to come to the other piece about grief, when my dad died, remember I said I could feel him with me? It was the beginning of my journey. I can connect with people on the other side as well. I've been able to do that for about 14 years now. And I tell you, it is so amazing how death is evolving. Most people now, like it used to be when I first connected with people on the other side, I would find them confused or lost or not understanding what had happened to them, or maybe they'd gone, you know, completely through the tunnel to the light, so to speak, and were experiencing themselves in life reviews or meeting family and friends and that kind of thing. And occasionally you would see them come back a bit and assist as a spirit their families. Well, about 3 years ago, something really changed about that. And now when I connect with people on the other side, it's like they just go pop and they become who they really, really are. As if we're all evolving, and so it's evolving for everybody, be it, you know, they've transitioned or they're here. And I suddenly began to realize this year that not only were they becoming who they really, really are very quickly, but they were coming back almost en masse to work with their families and their loved ones and the world at large to create the evolution of us. So I'll give you an example of that if I can. I was in Denmark in June, and I was working with a lady who said every time she walked in her house, she felt this kind of oppression come on her, like, and she was really concerned about it. So I tuned in, and I said, I think it's your mother. Has your mother gone over? And she said, yes. And I said, well, she really needs to get a message through to you. She's like, you're feeling this heavy energy because she's trying to get your attention and you're not paying attention. And I said, she needs you to forgive her. And the woman burst into tears and she said, oh my gosh, yes, that's exactly how it is. And she said, I do forgive her. I tell her I forgive her. And so I said, well, yes, she hears you. And in that moment, that mother, just her energy just went into pure light, and she opened up this amazing space for us that we were doing a course at the time, and she opened up a whole new level for us in that course. And I was just so awed by, here's this woman's mother, who at one point felt like this dense, heavy energy, who in fact is this amazing being who just opened up a whole new level of potential for our conscious evolution, that it made me look in a whole new way at what's really happening with death and how can we evolve our perceptions of that so we don't have to grieve anymore. That in fact, I know when people go over, you do feel loss, of course you do, but what if they're really still with us? You know, I've been passionate about watching. I don't know if you've seen Crossing Over with John Edwards. Did you ever watch it, John?
Yeah, I mean, I know the program. John Edwards, yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. And I've been just fascinated by watching it recently and just how much people still are with their loved ones, how many people experience this kind of lucid dreams of them visiting them or feeling them beside them at a moment in time or knowing they're there with them, just as I did with my father. And I think it would be wonderful when we have a world that can really acknowledge that we're not ever really separated from one another. We're really always there. It's just the continual evolution of us. So I think that will help to lessen the grief and the loss for people once we're much more consciously aware of that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting because, I mean, you mentioned, obviously, forgiveness there, and, you know, this is what A Course in Miracles is about, you know, and, you know, that Jesus channeled this work to really bring home a radical form of teaching that forgiveness is the tool which brings us enlightenment, you know. But it's not the kind of traditional forgiveness, is really a quantum forgiveness, you know, and the understanding that everything that we see in our world is just a projection. A projection of our unconscious guilt. And if we're here in a body, we've still got work to do. That everyone is projecting. So I wondered, you know, how, because I think you said you hadn't, had you come across A Course in Miracles or you heard of it or...
I know of it, but I've never studied it, so I don't know too much about it, actually. But But I think what you're saying,
because so many of the, you know, even the modalities you're talking about, they all have this commonality. Everywhere I see now is this understanding of forgiveness, you know.
I think the journey pretty much begins by loving ourselves, you know, and taking ourselves off the hook, if you will, not judge ourselves so much, not hold the past as unforgivable. You know, often people just live in such angst of what they've done or what they've been through in their lives, and I think we're beginning to live much more in the now, very much more present, and able to forgive ourselves for things that have happened, because we are on a learning path and an evolutionary path in which we're growing by leaps and bounds. And for me, it's okay to make mistakes, you know. I think that's part of getting out there and living life and making things happen. And
I totally agree. That the whole thing is that it has to start with ourselves, you know, because and it's beautifully understood in the Course, because in the Course it tells us we're all that is here. There's nothing else out there. So whatever we're doing to another or thinking about another is really we're thinking about ourselves. So, you know, the what goes around comes around is based on the principle that never really leaves us in the first place. So it deals with the level of thought, the level of mind.
That's right. John, have you heard of this a wonderful guy in, I think he's in Hawaii, and I can't remember his name, but he's I suppose he bills as a psychologist, but he's like a shaman. And what he did is he was hired into an institution for the criminally insane, where they were having all kinds of violence and the staff wouldn't stay and that kind of thing. Have you heard about him?
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm smiling from ear to ear as you're talking, because myself and my wife Mary and Sue, who they're all listening to this program, I know we all went and we did his weekend workshop. And you're talking about Dr. Len doing the Ho'oponopono, yeah?
Yeah, that's fantastic. Well, I'm so impressed with reading about him, because, you know, the story is that he said he refused to see patients. He would just sit with their files and he would find that deep place of loving them, of being okay with them in himself. And I do believe when I hear that story that it's not just in himself personally. I don't think the power would happen unless he was doing it in himself as everything, in himself as consciousness, if you will, and that he's kind of letting that release from consciousness. And the results he's had are apparently extraordinary. I'm sure you know more about it than I do, but that was my understanding of it as I read some of the emails about it.
Well, it is, and he's amazing. I mean, you know, he's in his mid-70s now, and he is so chilled out, he's almost horizontal, you know. And,
what's his name, John? I don't remember it.
Well, I don't know. I wish my wife and Sue over there could speak here, because I could never get it. Sue knows his name. Dr. Len Hugh, whatever. It's but you can get there on the website, on the Ho'oponopono, which we affectionately became to call it the pony treatment, just for short, you know.
That's what happened.
But we did the weekend workshop, and he was amazing. And, you know, he worked on the principle. And just say, and it's all tied in with the Course in Miracles understanding of Jesus' teachings, you know, is that this is all, you know, just an illusion, you know, and everything is a projection. So whoever's showing up in front of me as, let's say, criminally insane, which in his case, that's what he was working with, he acknowledged and owned the fact that that was an element of his thought process, his mind. And so the only thing he had to do was to, you know, forgive himself, forgive, you know, what was going on with him. So he actually taught the principle that all you had to do was say, I'm sorry, please forgive me, I love you. And he showed it in diagrammatical form at a spiritual level, you know, on the board of the transmutation and then going up into higher energies. But basically that's what he did with these criminally insane people. And, you know, the whole ward was shut down in a year, I think. It was empty. He cleared the whole place. Nobody could believe it.
Wow, fantastic.
But he talks a lot about the fact that everything is memory, you know, like, and that it's contained in everything, you know, in the furniture, in the room, and it's an amazing experience. And people would put their names who weren't able to be physically present at the workshops would often, like a proxy, to put their names and have their names up on the table there on the altar, so receiving it. So it really does remind us all of the interconnectedness of everyone, you know, that there is only one here.
Absolutely,
so, no, it's incredible. Where did you read about him, Salira?
Well, I've just seen some emails over the last probably 6 months, and I was just so impressed with it. I thought, oh, that's so amazing. I've just been kind of following it on email, but not really any more detailed than that. So it's brilliant, isn't it?
Well, the more I've kind of, I am a very, very early student of the course, but there's so much of it starts to make sense now, you know.
Yeah.
In fact, I was doing a lesson today, lesson 106, you know, and it's talking about giving, receiving, and it talks about how the fact of giving in order to get something back with interest is totally, it's not, you know, it's just not in the ballpark. And it made me realize, because one of Jesus' sayings in the same gospel that he lists, you know, he was talking about, don't lend money for interest, only lend it to those who can't give it back. And when I really got to thinking about this concept that there's nothing there, you know, it all made sense. I think that's the thing which is... And then I thought, my God, maybe this is why the whole lot is collapsing. And I think it is. Do you see that around you? You see the systems as we knew them, as we've known them for years, starting to suddenly go into, you know, breakdown?
Oh, yes, and I love it.
Because
as soon as it stops being what it's been, the whole new stuff is being created. That's what I've just written my latest book on is called The New Visionaries. And it's about that people are beginning to create brand new ways of doing things. And you're starting to see, like, real people really create new things. Like, if you look at YouTube on the internet, you know, you can go on there now and you can get real videos from Afghanistan, from Australia, from autistic people, from, you know, you name it. It's like the power of the real people and how we can create brand new ways of doing things. Oh, it's just stunning. And I think that as the old systems go into demise, we're going to see more and more and more of that unique individuality, but connected, you know, people for a kind of vibrant world working together all over the world. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
You even look at, on the internet now, you can get Skype, which is free downloadable software off the internet in which you can call any other computer user around the world who has Skype for free. Doesn't matter where they are, what country they're in, it doesn't cost a penny. You think, holy jumping, that's so different than 10 years ago where it cost me a fortune to call my mother in Canada, you know,
absolutely,
every couple of weeks. We're just moving so much closer together and you know, look at the live Earth concerts and the Live Aid and how it's all bringing us more into a sense of global connection and that we can do things that will, you know, create a better world.
And it's also interesting how, as this is happening, you know, the breaking out, of course it brings up more fear.
You still there, John?
I'd say as this is happening, the breaking down of the systems, it seems to bring up more fear in those in positions of authority or leadership who are continually trying to control and contain and control and contain. And I mean, not in a mocking way, but I kind of smile sometimes, this concept that every time something seems to go wrong, rather than look at a really enlightened way of looking at the problem, there's just like a new law put out, you know. And I just think that every time a new law is brought out, they're automatically creating, you know, people that are going to circumvent that law instead of getting to a different way of looking at the problem. Hello, Salira? Oh, folks, it sounds like we've lost Solera for a while.
Hi, Peggy Lee Quayler here. Hey, thanks for listening to Stories Untold on BBS. And you can visit my website at cdbaby.com/cd/Peggy Lee with an A. You can purchase a copy there or write a review. And stay tuned for my next album project, That's Just Hollywood, coming out in June. I'll be sure Doug has a copy for BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com, the number one internet radio network on the planet.
Thank you, folks, for just bearing with us. There was a little technical hitch again. Solera, before I lost you out into the ether there, I was just saying about how the more the kind of leaders and of the world try to control, the more the fear is pushing, the more the people, the more the systems are breaking down, the more fear comes up, and then they try and control even more, and it doesn't seem to be working.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's kind of futile on their parts, actually. Because I think that, you know, the real power of real people is starting to come to the fore, and I think that's just gorgeous. So it's part of our shift, and I think we just have to kind of look on it all and go, it's all perfect, we're going exactly where we need to go, and then get creative about making a new way of doing things.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. No, I definitely think that's the thing. And do you go into schools at all? Are you working with young people today? Because that's the other thing, you know. These kids today, they've evolved so much, you know. And I was looking at a video clip that came to me by email from a friend in Canada of a young girl who addressed, I think it was the United Nations Assembly, and what she spoke and how she spoke was just incredible. She was 13 years of age.
Yes, I saw that. It was beautiful, yeah.
You saw that one, did you?
I did. It was amazing, yeah.
That was amazing. That really, and you know, to think she's 13 years of age, and I think we've got to start acknowledging these kids that they're not, you know, they do know their own mind. They do know what they want. They do know what is right and what is wrong. They have such a sense of that, and we've got to start listening to them. It's so crucial.
Oh, yeah, the kids are so different today. I don't go into schools myself. I tend to stay away from the systems altogether. But I do speak at conferences, that's where we met, if you recall. But I do speak at conferences for the new abilities and the magnificence of the kids today, so that we can begin to reorient our learning systems away from just a head-oriented, logical, analytical process, even memory-based, into a more intuitive, knowing, connected, ultra-creative, you know, where every child's genius is brought to the fore. I know you've had some wonderful experiences, didn't you? Was it in India, John, with the school there where they're doing a new kind of learning for kids?
Oh yeah, I did, and that's what I spoke about at the conference, and I've mentioned it before on this program. It is quite a challenging concept for the traditionally educated Western minds, I think, and even, you know, from other countries in the East as well, because, you know, most of those countries, they took their education system from the British, so it was very British-style oriented, you know, kind of disciplinarian and, you know, very controlled and directed. But I think that the concept that you can actually trust these kids that they want to learn, that's built into them, and that they have an innate knowing what they want to learn and when they're ready to learn it. That was the big thing about the KTM school in India that blew me away, and which is quite a challenge. You know, people think you have to make kids learn. You know, well, you really don't. Really don't. If you give them, if you listen to them, hear what they're interested in, and just follow that, you know, I think, you know, magic happens. I know it does, and we're really pursuing the first of these homeschooling houses, which is already really underway down in the west of England here. And there are a lot of other educational movements as well, which which promote this or realizing this. And I think that people are seeing that it has to happen because, again, the system, the traditional education system, is breaking down, you know?
Yeah.
They can't get teachers, and parents are taking their children out of school in the hordes. And in the end, I think it's the children that will create change, as it has been throughout history.
Yeah. I think they're already creating it, pretty much. Most of the kids that I do get to connect with are fully telepathic. So, for example, they're telepathic. They can talk to one another without words. They do it energetically. And they can do that around the world, between classrooms and in the classroom as well. I've met lots of kids who are able to do that. It's really stunning, actually, when you see what they're capable of, these kids, and how they perceive life. It's just, oh, brilliant.
Absolutely.
I'm one of the people who thinks every... Sorry, go ahead.
Did you get that Indigo Evolution DVD? Have you watched that?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
That's an amazing DVD, which is an actual documentary made by James Twyman and his team, and Doreen Virtue is the executive producer of it, you know. And they actually interview these kids and their parents and grandparents and educators and medical professionals. And it's quite incredible what those kids can do. And they talk about autism a lot on there. There's a growing number of incidences of autism, quite frightening.
Yes.
So, and they believe that not all of it is true autistic. It's just that they're communicating at different levels.
I believe that too. I believe autism has a huge potential, even though it's a hard thing. It's hard for them to live in the world. I think it's a form of ultra sensitivity, actually.
Yeah.
And it has its own genius inherent in it, but very challenging for some of them. I have a couple of friends in the States who are working with the potential of autism and doing some amazing work with it, so it's really exciting. In fact, one of them, Susie Miller, who's in Arizona, she recoined the word to awesome-ism. And what she does is she works with the kids telepathically, especially the ones that don't use language, and they see amazing changes in a very short period of time with touch, with communication, with, behavioral changes, with relationships with the parents, all kinds of things, just because she sits and bees with the child as if they're magnificent and that they have something to give her. And the relationship, those kids bond with her immediately. It's quite amazing, the work that she's doing with them. It's a beautiful
thing. Yeah, there are amazing things happening. And I know I'm going to have Alan Wilson come on one evening, because that would be great. Did you know Alan?
Oh, yes, he's a good friend of mine, absolutely.
Yeah.
Develop Your Child. He runs
Develop Your Child. He's doing some amazing work, so I'm looking forward to having Alan on.
Fantastic.
Well, Salira, we're coming up to the end of our showtime here. It's been wonderful having you on the show. I appreciate your time. Just tell our listeners, if you can, the name of your book and the website where they can read a bit about you and contact you.
Yep. Okay. The latest book is called The New Visionaries, Evolutionary Leadership for a Vibrant World, and it can be found at www.newvisionaries.net. That's newvisionaries.net. And also, we have another website called www.evolutionarycourses.com, where all the courses that we offer are available there.
That's fantastic. Okay. Well, Salira, many, many thanks for your time. It's wonderful to have you on the show, and give my love to Santari, and I hope to meet you up the road sometime.
Absolutely. You and your wonderful new wife. thanks, John. It's been brilliant.
All right, Salira. Thanks ever so much, and I'll speak to you soon. Lots of love to you guys.
Lots of love. Bye.
Take care. Bye now. Bye.